Thank you, and thanks for the opportunity of speaking with you today. I've been asked to address this topic from the perspective of a long-term equity investor, and I'll do that specifically from AustralianSuper's perspective, but many of the comments and observations I make will hold true for a lot of other institutional investors, in particular most industry super funds that invest in infrastructure. Just a quick snapshot of the super industry and what AustralianSuper is. The Australian super industry has over $1 trillion in assets and is divided into various sectors. AustralianSuper is an industry fund, and industry funds have about 17 or 18% of the assets in the nation's superannuation industry. And industry funds and public sector funds are the principal investors in infrastructure. Self-managed funds, which are the single largest sector, of course, by and large don't invest in the sector. Retail funds, by and large, don't invest in the sector. And corporate funds, by and large, don't invest in the sector. AustralianSuper is a large fund, nearly 1.5 million members, $27 billion in assets, and we've got about 100,000 employers around the nation that pay into the fund. But importantly, in this context, we've got extremely strong cash flow, somewhere between $2 and $3 billion a year in net investable cash flow that we need to find a home for, and obviously maximise the return so that we optimise the retirement outcomes for our members. The average age of our member is about 38, so you'd expect them to have an investment time horizon, if they're in the workforce, of another 20 or 25 years. But of course, they expect to live for another 20 or so years beyond that. So theoretically, we're talking about an investment horizon of 40 or 45 years, perhaps, which is what you'd expect of a long-term investor. But, and there's been some references to this already, the Australian superannuation industry is a much different beast to the one that existed some years ago. And so rather than our fund, and indeed most funds, except for defined benefit funds, having a time horizon of up to half a century, we've actually got a rather shortened time horizon because in July 06, federal legislation was changed such that most Australians can now choose their own superannuation fund. And the market has developed over the last 6 or 8 years such that when a member is in a fund, they're typically free to choose the investment options and the asset allocation that they choose. So today they might be invested in a balanced option that might have 10 or 20% invested in, say, infrastructure. Tomorrow they might say, I want all of my money invested in cash. And that has obvious implications, which I'm going to touch on shortly. Industry funds, including AustralianSuper, are long-standing investors in infrastructure and have been substantial investors in this sector since the mid-90s. The two predecessor funds of AustralianSuper, ARF and STA, both made material investments in infrastructure dating back to 1994. And the allocations for those investments originally came from our bond portfolio, so we were looking for a return that was somewhere between what we'd expect from a diversified bond portfolio and what we might expect from a diversified equities portfolio. Our infrastructure assets now constitute just under $4 billion, and they're around 17% of our balanced option. We have 16 options in the fund. And through our principal infrastructure manager, Industry Funds Management, and through some direct holdings, we've got stakes in airports, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, toll roads such as Eastern Distributor and the M5 in Sydney, series of hydro and wind farm developments through our investment in Pacific Hydro, and so the list goes on. We have about a third of our infrastructure assets in this country and about two-thirds offshore, and that's a ratio that's changed over the last couple of years from when it was about 50-50. I'm going to touch on why that change has occurred. So as an investment class, it's proven to be a very good one for our members. Returns in the last year or so have been very disappointing, still positive, but disappointing relative to the historical returns we've been able to generate. Over the 3 years, the returns from infrastructure has been 11.2% per annum, and since inception, so this is over a decade and a half, the returns have been 10.8% per annum on average each year. So a very healthy return, and better than we had expected when we first invested in this sector. As with most other asset classes, the global financial crisis has meant that in the shorter term, infrastructure has delivered lower returns than history might have suggested, and certainly lower returns than we would have preferred. But the bigger impact on investors such as ourselves are the impact that the global financial crisis has had on equity values, listed equities. And I'm not talking here just of Australian Super, this is true of all material investors in infrastructure, because we've seen the percentage of the total funds invested in unlisted assets increase as the value of listed equities has fallen. And it's fallen, as listed equity values have fallen, the percentage of the portfolio that's in unlisted assets has risen to the point now where most material investors in unlisted assets, including infrastructure, have a higher proportion of their portfolio in infrastructure than they would prefer over the longer term. But we see this as a cyclical issue, which is a direct product of the global financial crisis, and when equity markets rebound, as we trust they will, that combined with the very strong cash flow we have will see the weightings return to their more normal levels, and will mean in an absolute sense that those of us that have an appetite for investing in infrastructure in the future as opposed to just holding an existing portfolio will have the capacity to do that. And from Australian Super's perspective, we do have an appetite for continuing to invest in infrastructure, including through PPPs, provided they're structured appropriately, and I'll touch on that in a moment. So just a couple of remarks about various elements of the changing environment. So compounding the issue on asset allocation that I just spoke about is the notion of liquidity, especially in the context that I spoke about earlier, where now members can choose their own super fund, and within that fund can choose their own asset allocation. That clearly compresses the investment horizon of the institutional investor in the knowledge that members could impose pressures on the trustee and the portfolio that they have created, not aware of what members' future own choices might be, either to exit from the fund, potentially putting pressures for redemption on the trustee, or just moving within the fund from one asset class to another. Now, happily for Australian Super, with our very strong cash flow, that hasn't had any material effects on us. But it is a liquidity issue that many funds never had to consider until the last 12 months or so. As I said, fortunately it hasn't impacted on us. But there are some funds where, given their smaller size and in particular their smaller cash flow, this may well prove to be an issue for them. Okay, so moving from liquidity to gearing, and we've heard a lot this morning about the leveraging that's occurring at the moment. For any new infrastructure assets, we expect that the level of gearing will be lower than we've seen in the last few years. This reflects both more conservative capital structures and the lower availability of debt from banks and other providers. And the implication of this clearly is that more equity will be required and or prices will need to fall to achieve the required returns. And of course, the more global observation is that infrastructure, like any investment decision, will continue to need to compete for funding on a risk-adjusted basis. The credit crisis has resulted in the significant devaluation of many sectors, including equities, property and credit, most of which have been devalued to a greater extent than infrastructure. In this environment, the number and scale of potential opportunities far exceeds the availability of capital, and hence any new investment, whether it's in infrastructure or elsewhere, ultimately has a very high opportunity cost. So it's very much a buyer's market. Now, we've noted and in fact been part of a declining appetite for investment in Australian infrastructure in the last couple of years. And I've spoken in part about one of the reasons for that, but I want to touch on a couple of others. Part of this appetite has been because we've redirected assets, including through the broader IFM family, offshore, still investing in infrastructure but not in domestic infrastructure. The reasons for this include that infrastructure as an asset class has, over the period that we've become involved in it, and I hesitate to use the word pioneer, but we were one of the first institutional investors to be a significant investor in infrastructure. But over the last decade and a half, infrastructure has become more widely acknowledged in this country, and the number of parties, both domestic and internationally, bidding on projects have increased such that the demand far outstripped the supply of projects. I'm talking here of some little time ago. Secondly, and this is particularly pertinent from an investor's point of view and distinguishes this perspective from some of the ones that you've heard this morning, there can be a lack of alignment between pure equity investors and parties with other interests. The quantum of revenues generated in the early phases of projects for parties involved in winning consortia provide a substantial incentive to win, but this may be in conflict with the longer-term optimisation of cash flows and risks, which is the real issue that investors such as ourselves are most interested in. So examples of this include underwriting on bonds, advisory fees on the project, and construction contract margins. Thirdly, and I think this is one of the universal themes that we've heard this morning, is that bid processes often involve a high degree of cost and time, with the prospect of success, as far as investors like ours are concerned, often resting mainly with issues outside our control, for example, the ranging of debt and construction price. And lastly, some governments, and Mark made reference to this just now, have begun cherry-picking projects for public versus private financing, where only those projects with a marginal or risky economic are released for private sector financing. The Gateway Duplication Project might be an example of that. Okay, so how then do we increase investment in infrastructure, having regard to that background? And in particular, what is it that super funds who have a natural inclination to be investors in this area, what is it they're looking forward to for in the future? First of all, we understand and acknowledge the social and community benefits of investing in infrastructure, but at the end of the day, we're not a honeypot for pursuing those sort of benefits for the community. We are there to optimise the retirement outcomes of our members. So we're looking for strong returns relative to the risk involved in any investment, and that's relative to comparable international projects and other sectors, particularly given the current paucity of capital. The key characteristics for a successful project that we look for are long-term capital structure, contractor alignment, understandable earnings, that it's an essential service and there is a real need for the project, and justification of the effort involved in being involved in the project. One possible approach which may lead to better alignment of interests, but which would also lead to a greater workload for the government and a redistribution of the risk involved, would be for the stages of PPPs to be awarded separately to the designer, to the construction company, and finally to the investors. Alternatively, Governments could own the asset during the design and construction phases and sell the asset to equity investors once the asset is operating. In other words, the government would provide more upfront funding. The return on the asset to be earned by private investors would obviously be lower than many of the current models, given the reduced risk. Although governments would need to fund the first projects, once the process is up and running, the capital could be recycled as assets are sold to super funds and other investors. And this is a model that we haven't really had to think about too much in the salad days of PPPs, but with the constraints on capital, this is a model that governments, I think, are going to have to think more seriously about. Finally, I note that later speakers will be discussing approaches developed in other countries from which we can probably learn. One final point that I'll make, we're already seeing governments around the world changing the way they undertake PPPs. Recently, the province of British Columbia in Canada was unable to reach agreement with its preferred bidder for the construction of a toll road and bridge, and has decided to fund it internally. They had already agreed to fund about one-third of the financing required for the project, but even then the final terms couldn't be agreed, which is reflective of the fact that we're seeing a divergence in the return expectations from the private sector, which appear to be higher than that willing to be provided by governments. We must find a middle ground in order for PPPs to provide the benefits they're capable of generating in the future. Thank you.
Could I ask if there's some questions from the audience? Do have Ian expand? One over there, there's a microphone near you. Thank you. If there's other questions, please come up to the microphone so I can identify.
Ian, Scott Allison from Abbey Group. My question relates to the ratio between your listed stocks and your infrastructure stocks. And the fact that the fall of the listed stocks has caused that ratio to be out of whack. I wasn't sure from your explanation whether that means you're going to sort of stay at current levels and wait for the listed sector to improve and put that ratio back in balance. And does that mean that your appetite for further infrastructure at the moment is zero? One question. Two, if your infrastructure stocks are doing better than your unlisted stocks, is it an argument for perhaps having a look at that ratio?
Dealing with the first question, is our appetite for infrastructure today zero? No, it's not. At the end of the day, and this sort of, I guess, is a bridge to the second part of the question, we're about optimising the return in our total portfolio. So we don't look in absolute terms at one asset class, dismiss it, then move on to the other. We're looking at the aggregate effect of all the asset classes in the portfolio. So it's not literally zero, but we're looking at any new infrastructure opportunity. I guess there are a series of criteria, but one will be, one issue will be, do we want to extend beyond the current range, which, as I've said, is towards the maximum limit that we'd be very comfortable with. But the other is, how does it stack up with other investment opportunities? I spoke about the very strong cash flow, and if an infrastructure opportunity came along that represented a better investment opportunity than other options available to us, then we'd look very seriously at it. The second point goes to the different styles of managing a portfolio. We have a relatively dynamic way of asset allocation, of how we perceive asset allocation. A different and still entirely acceptable way is to rebalance. So there would be a lot of institutional investors that would never get into this position, never get into a position where one asset class was beyond the benchmark allocation, because they would be automatically rebalancing, selling the assets, in our case, unlisted assets, because they've exceeded the quote-unquote appropriate benchmark allocation, and buying, in our case, equities, because we need to rebalance to the appropriate benchmark allocation. That's not the approach we take. So the inference behind your question is what we do. That is, we don't automatically rebalance to some notional figure. We're not uncomfortable with where our allocations are, because if we were, we'd act on that. But we've taken a judgment that equity markets are not about to rebound tomorrow. I'll take note of Vol's comment. We might get into the market on the 10th of August. But we're comfortable with those allocations. And if we formed a different macroeconomic view, and in particular a different sector view, then that would be reflected in an underweighting or overweighting to the various allocations we've got in the different asset classes today.
Perhaps I'll take the chair's privilege of asking a question, Ian. Back in the salad days, there was often some thought that some of the debt that was put into PPPs would be, because of the ratings, be able to be put into the market as liquid instruments subject to a satisfactory rating. Fixed interest investments as a class was a bit of a no-no for many years. Given where we've been, is there a chance that the long-term investor may be interested in that as distinct to bank debt as another form of long-term investment?
Industry funds have typically been equity investors in infrastructure assets, and we're looking now at whether we might move into the debt area, but it's a new game for us, and we'd want the, again, it really comes to a pretty simple equation, at least described in these terms, the risk return equation for us. We're attracted to the idea of having a seat at the table, principally through IFM, like literally a seat at the table as in a board seat. We're just beginning to talk about the extent to which we move into debt involvement in these transactions, but at the moment, equity is our principal preferred avenue in.
It just seemed in several of the speakers have talked about the different sectors of money that might come into a PPP and that we've used in the past, and maybe that's one that hasn't been used in the past that may become available in the future.
Mm.